Time now for New World, a roundtable discussion originating on the campus of the University of Chicago. Our moderator for today, Edward Rosenheim, Jr., Associate Professor of Humanities in the College, University of Chicago. The subject for discussion, Schools for Tomorrow. Included, among other things, will be the probable role that television will play in meeting America's future needs for mass education. The panel will include two of Chicago's most distinguished educators. Monitor goes now to Edward Rosenheim, Jr. at the University of Chicago.
When we hear the phrase, the schools of tomorrow, it's natural and proper enough to wonder first whether there'll be enough of such schools, whether they can possibly be filled with sufficient teachers, whether new means can be found to carry on instruction. These problems, which arise out of the enormous quantity of young people whom we shall have to educate on all levels, have been receiving a great deal of public attention. And realistically, educators have been thinking of such devices as television as ways in which we can meet the needs of the future. It has, though, been my impression that the urgency of this question, the question of the numbers of people we must educate, has tended to draw our attention away from some other equally vexing and perhaps even more fundamental matters. Essentially, I think, we've recently been neglecting the kind of education which we must provide in the future, or, put another way, the commonplace but vital questions of whom we are educating, in what, and for what purpose. In order to turn our thoughts to this kind of question, I'm joined today by two very distinguished representatives of our own University of Chicago. The first is the Chancellor of the University, Lawrence A. Kimpton, whose interest in these matters arises not only from his administrative position, but from his academic role as a philosopher as well. Our other participant is Richard P. McKeon, Distinguished Service Professor of Greek and Philosophy, and among a number of other things, the chairman of our Faculty Board of Radio and Television at the University of Chicago. Well, Mr. McKeon, do you concur in my general view that the quantitative problems of education, the how-many's, are being somewhat overemphasized these days?
It's inevitable, Rosenheim, that the quantitative problem should be prominent. Not only is it an urgent problem, but it's one that catches the imagination of the average citizen who might otherwise not worry about education. I was struck by the fact that a report which appeared earlier this year, Schools for Tomorrow, an Educational Blueprint by Alexander J. Stoddard, seems to have caught the imagination of educators and the ordinary public in a way which no other report has.
Well, of course, we need to remember, in Mr. Rosenheim's implied criticism, that the problem Dr. Stoddard is talking about is a very real one. There are an enormous number of young people in the elementary and secondary schools today, and they'll shortly be with us in the colleges, and there must be some way of handling them. I do have the feeling, though, that Dr. Stoddard's analysis of the problem is only a partial one, and therefore his solution is only a partial one, too.
I think we ought to mention what the solution is. Dr. Stoddard presents his problem and finds, particularly in television and in the reconstruction of schools to take advantage of television, the training of skilled personnel to use television, the chief solution of the problem. And I take it that it is this that you look upon as the partial solution.
Yes, that's correct. He's approaching the problem from a quantitative point of view, as has been suggested, and he's utilizing a quantitative medium, namely television, as a total solution, it seems to me.
Well, then I think the burden is upon us at this point to try to restate the problem in its full dimensions. Does one of you want to have a go at that and try really to remedy some of the things that Mr. Stoddard's omitted?
I'd like to have a go at it, but let me first say that I think he's quite correct that television has a function, and therefore anything that I say from this point on will not be a diminution of the importance of the new techniques that could be employed. But it would seem to me that before one asks a question concerning how one uses a device, one asks what it is that one is trying to teach. One asks what one expects to achieve by teaching, and one asks who it is that will be taught.
Well, these are very good questions indeed. And, McKeon, what would you say is a general answer to the first question? What should be taught?
Let me begin where Stoddard does, because on many of the things that I have to say about the Stoddard report, it seems to me that what I am doing is developing the footnotes or the subordinate clauses of his sentences. He says that the sheer quantity of knowledge has increased. He says that we are living in a new world.
You don't deny this, of course.
This is exactly where I would like to begin. I'd like to say that it is not merely the case that we must teach a good deal more in our high schools, but other statistics are equally striking. We are teaching a great deal less in our high schools. I have no great faith in the statistics that Stoddard gives with respect to the needs of the next 10 years, and therefore the statistics I quote are similarly subject to suspicion. But I am told, and I have it in print, therefore I believe it, that 46% of American public high schools offer no foreign languages at all, that 23% offer no physics or chemistry, that 24% no geometry. I'd like to start there because it seems to me that part of our educational function is not merely to give more information or more training in particular subjects like garage maintenance or driving an automobile, but it is the development of what we used to call disciplines and skills.
Well, you're not suggesting, then, that less is taught currently in the high schools. You're suggesting that what is taught is not perhaps as significant as it once was or indeed should be in the future.
We haven't decided what it is that we want to teach. Mm-hmm.
Before we go any further, I wonder if I can interrupt with one question of my own. I think we court a certain danger of sounding like three college professors sitting around complaining about what's taught in high schools. Do you think the kind of question that McKeon has raised initially applies to college curricula too, Chancellor?
Oh, I'm sure it does, though perhaps less so, if I might say so respectfully, with regard to the secondary schools. It seems to me that the major universities, at any rate, and our substantial colleges throughout the country are sticking pretty close to the more traditional curriculum, though there are very substantial deviations made in certain of our institutions.
May I get back to this challenge, because it seems to me that what I've said can be substantiated by a clearer statement of what is involved. There are two dimensions in which the high school ought to move into a field in which it has not. It has rather retreated. Namely, we're in a new world, a world which is sometimes referred to as an emerging single community. We need to understand that new world. Secondly, we have benefited by the advance of science, but we haven't decided what the impact of science on society is or what the average person should know about science. And by science, I mean any kind of knowledge. We haven't talked about what the sciences should be in the high school. We haven't talked about what the humanities have been.
Well, I would agree with that, I think, but how does this have any impact on the informational approach, which it seems to me Dr. Stoddard is suggesting through his use of television? How does this have any impact on the informational approach to these matters? As he points out, and you do too, there is more science to know. There is a wider knowledge of the humanities also to know. Isn't this a matter simply of further information being imparted to our young people?
I think not, but before I come to
I don't think so either, but I'm being the devil's advocate here for a moment.
Before I come to a positive answer, let me recall to you what it is concretely we are talking about. We have new courses in history, which are very interesting. They are, I suppose, stimulating to the imagination. The student will do things like view television for events of interest, like the coronation. Instead of going through the laborious process of trying to understand the past and how it influenced the present, he will visit the fire station or the television station of his hometown, and here he will see all of these events brought together. Without deprecating this, it seems to me this does not help him know either what the problems are or how to deal with the problems. And therefore, why don't we turn to the question, was the second one that we enumerated, of what the learning process is, what the objectives of education are.
Well, could you begin to describe that for me? What is the learning process that we're genuinely concerned about in education?
I take my beginning from the text of Dr. Stoddard. He has a section called How We Learn. And learning consists of two phases. One is the gathering of raw materials, which one perceives by the senses, and the second is a phase of thinking. If this is the case, then obviously what one does is first present a lot of facts, and the television is a means of doing this, and then you break into smaller classes and think about these facts. Now, this does not seem to me to take care of the two important dimensions of the learning process as I understand it. The first is the perception of the problem. Television can help if the analysis is good, but usually it is the insight of the individual that must be developed. And secondly, not the cognitive or the intellectual side, the motivation of the student. And on neither of these, seeing what the problem is, or insight, or the internal push that is necessary, is there sufficient emphasis in the analysis of how we learn that Dr. Stoddard gives us?
I'd like to ask one question at this point, and maybe, Mr. Kimpton, you can answer that as the chancellor of a university. To what extent is McKeon's analysis of the learning process reflected in the curricula and the plans of universities today? In other words, is Stoddard here really suggesting that we redefine and reshape the whole educational process in order to conform to the requirements of this strange electronic eye we have?
Well, I rather suspect he is. It seems to me, as we look at this cognitive process, as Mr. McKeon, a distinguished professor of Greek and philosophy, calls it, that there is more in this process than the mere perception of an image on a screen.
And you don't get it by exposition. You don't get
That's
it
correct.
By the impersonal appearance of a photogenic person with a good voice setting forth easily a series of events or a series of data.
Well, these might assist, wouldn't you agree, McKeon?
This is a
but
good...
something else has to happen.
Yes.
Isn't that the point?
Bear in mind, I would want television to have a place, but I should expect that it would be on the level of what I would call the assemblage of material.
Mm-hmm.
The active assemblage of the problem, the active investigation of the problem, or even the perception of the values.
To what extent would group discussion, which is almost impossible, I would suspect, over television, necessary for this particular value to emerge?
I think that's very important. I'd want even more than discussion, however. Discussion can be as aimless as television, unless it has an objective. I would like the experience of dealing together with a problem, a recognition of what constitutes a solution. Or let me put it another way. When we deal with discussion, it tends to be debate.
True.
There are problems in which we know what the answer is and should be. And the student should be led first not into the questions that man has never been able to solve. He ought to learn some of the techniques where we've solved the problems. Then maybe he can carry this over. Now, television, I think, could help this. If you had, for example, the exposition of a point of view, the exposition of subject matter, and then classes, small discussion groups, formed to follow this through. This has been done at some institutions.
Let me haul this together for just a moment.
Okay, see if you can.
Well, I gather you're defining the end of the educational process as a kind of habit of understanding. Does this put it fairly well?
Habit of understanding, I would say yes, except I don't like the word habit. I would say it is rather an insight, an ability to see what problems are, coupled with an interest, a direction. I want both the skill or art or discipline, and I want a directed life, which is partly moral, partly a sense of belonging to an ongoing, free, and creative civilization.
Well, I would object strongly to that word habit, too, and if I
officially
might
apologize for its use in the presence of two senior colleagues.
Well, it does seem to me that Dr. Stoddard is referring almost exclusively to this aspect of habit, which is a part, of course, and a significant part of education. I would gather that he's thinking of education in terms of a kind of repetitive quality, in terms of which one sees, one memorizes, one repeats. And I think we've suggested that education goes well beyond this. And
I think Stoddard goes a little beyond that. He also likes to talk of skills and training. But I take it that skill and training is the acquisition of an ability to do something, which you then repeat. Whereas we have been talking about that much more precious aspect of a democratic education, insight, originality, and a creative confidence, a mutual confidence that makes the community. I wonder whether we oughtn't to turn, however, to take a look at our third problem, namely, who it is that is being educated.
Well, this is a very important matter, it seems to me, and isn't Dr. Stoddard suggesting that everyone should be educated, and that television is a way of getting at everyone? This is an assumption that I would seriously question, or at any rate, could I put it another way, that the abler people are the ones that most deserve an education, and I would suspect play a more significant and important role in later life.
Let me quibble with you. I don't think I agree with you there, Kempton. one of the importances that could be attached to television is that it might make part of our civilization an ongoing educative process, and therefore I would like to think that particularly for adult education, television would make an important addition. But having quibbled, I think I agree with the rest of what you said.
Well, I'm not sure I would deny your point either. Of course, education or television can play an important role in the continuing education, particularly adult education, of course. But isn't it the case, and this goes back to your motivation, it seems to me, that you mentioned a moment ago, we're concerned, aren't we, in our current democratic civilization with the superior student in a very serious way indeed. He needs special encouragement. He needs, I would say, all of the accelerating devices that we can produce. And this, I seriously question, can be handled in terms of a mass medium such as television.
I would remind you that Dr. Stoddard himself quotes the report from the White House Conference on Education in 1953, and while I don't think he goes as far as you do, Chancellor, this report includes the statement that the talent of each child is to be sought out and developed to the fullest, each weakness is to be studied and so far as possible corrected and so on. I think you could take even a more moderate position than yours and simply ask whether individual differences can ever possibly be taken into account if you rely as heavily upon such a medium as television to do the major educational job.
May I suggest that you're both being utopian here? In the beginning, we said that the importance of the Stoddard report was that it seemed to indicate what the center of interest in the United States today was in education. There have been a lot of reports, some of them quite subtle, some that we should probably have followed through without objecting as we have. They did not catch the attention of the public. But this deals with education in terms of manpower. The problem of education is the number. Let's begin with that premise. That means that for the elementary school, for the high school, the function that we seem to be assigning to education is a custodial function. We've already gotten to the point at which the high school teachers spend so much time keeping order that the educational function has disappeared. And I invite you, gentlemen, therefore, to separate the educational function from this custodial function. That's our problem, and I think Stoddard probably is right here.
Well, I would agree. We don't deny the importance of the custodial function. Isn't that the case? That is, it exists, and it must be taken care of.
Yes, there are how many million? I don't have the right page here.
Well, school children. A lot.
They have to be taken off the streets from 8:30 to 3. They then impose standards on their fellows. The bright student who might be interested in mathematics conceals it. He is bored by his work. And then we have from this the problems of uniformity of taste and juvenile delinquency.
Well, don't you think that some of Dr. Stoddard's suggestions in this regard have some real significance? He points out, for example, that greater utilization of educated people in a community should be made. And this seems to me to be a very significant and interesting suggestion.
Well, I think the general tendency of the discussion here has not been to deny the importance of the questions that, that Dr. Stoddard's report raises. But I think that in what both of you gentlemen have said, there is a kind of insistence that the questions be regarded in a far broader context than Stoddard is willing to supply.
But you can't do it by means of a technique or a gadget.
Well, that's right.
And he uses the word gadget himself. I think that was carefully selected.
Well, go ahead, Mr. McKeon.
If one turns in this direction, I'd now like to come to the question of the more gifted student. I've been attending meetings in which manpower has come up, and I recognize that he is now talented manpower. The gifted student, I think, can be taken care of if we can manage to break down other roadblocks than Stoddard is talking about. I would suggest three. The roadblock of teacher certification, the roadblock of the rigid separation of high school from college, and finally, the roadblock that stands in the way of the specification of the kind of educational disciplines that we've been talking about.
So that in our concluding moments, we have come face to face with precisely these problems, and you've come up with very tangible modes of solution other than this total reliance upon television or any single gimmick of this sort.
Though I hope we do not deny that it might be a valuable medium in which to do certain kinds of things at any rate.
I think it's appropriate to end the discussion with this suggestion that our eyes stay open. Thank you so much, Chancellor Lawrence A. Kimpton and Professor Richard P. McKeon. Now, this is Edward Rosenheim at the University of Chicago, returning you to Monitor in Radio Central.
Thank you, Edward Rosenheim, Jr., Associate Professor of Humanities in the College, University of Chicago, for moderating our roundtable discussion today, and our thanks to your colleagues. We shall be looking forward to next week's edition of New World on the Monitor Beacon. Take one.